Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Live from the Investors Bank Studio, Boomer Esiason, Greg Giannotti, Boomer and Gio on the Fan, simulcast across the country on CBS Sports Network. Good Wednesday morning. The homestand started with a bang for the Mets at Citi Field. A big win, a big offensive explosion late in the game for the Mets as they take down the Indians in game one of this nine-game important homestand that just feels like the playoffs for them because every game is that important. Yankees head out west, of course, after I extol the virtues of Domingo Herman, and he's got to start game one of any postseason series, and he's their best pitcher, and oh man, this guy is on a roll at 16-2. And then things just unravel very quickly for him in the first inning, but I still think that this is your guy, unless he totally falls off a cliff in the last month and a half, to be either game one or game two in a postseason series. We've got Yankee tickets every hour this morning, so stay tuned for that. A pair may be for you. But the big news of the day is that Boomer's back. Good morning, Boomer. What's happening?
Yeah, I don't know if that's big news. I just think it's just normal news. How about that?
Okay, normal news
of
the day.
Yeah, you know, and I got to tell you, I've had a great 3 days and played a lot of great golf over the last 3 days. And yesterday I played this great little golf course on the North Shore of Long Island. I don't know if you know where it is. Nissaquag.
Up in St. James.
That's right, man. It's a cool little place, man. So I've always wanted to play it and got a chance to play yesterday. So I was pretty lucky about that. Weather was great, except for a couple threatening thunderstorms both on Sunday and Monday.
Sure, yeah.
And Monday, man, we had the most unbelievable rainbow out east, man. I could have hung on that rainbow.
No, I saw it. I was actually so beautiful. A double one in Bellport. I saw it. It's crazy.
So it was good. So, yeah, I had a nice couple days off. Missed you guys. And
did you?
I
don't think
you
did.
You know what I want to say? Yeah, that was very disingenuous.
Yeah,
I'm sorry,
I was
going to
say.
No,
I
did miss you guys. I'm sure you guys were screaming about sports and everything else. And I don't think that I checked out because I didn't check out. I was checking in, making sure that you guys were still on the air. And you're still giving me crap about that. Keeping it right and all that other stuff. And obviously all over the Mets and the Yankees. And, you know, yesterday was a tale of two decisions. Because the last time we saw Steven Matz on the mound prior to last night was where? Down in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened to Steven Matz in Atlanta? He had thrown like 79 pitches, got 14 guys out in a row, and you and I came in the next morning and supported the manager for yanking him out of the game.
Sure.
When he did, especially with Seth Lugo coming in to take over after he got the lead and everything else. Blah, blah. I don't want to rehash that. But last night, a little bit different. Last night, he's pitching. He's got over 90 pitches, and he's pitching well. And he does, like he always does at home, it seems like. And Mickey let him go out there again, and then he put the first two guys on. And then he took him out, and then Wilson came in and did what I thought was, that was the yeoman's work. That was the high-anxiety moment in the game. That was the moment where you needed a guy to come out of the bullpen, and guess what? The Mets bullpen actually did what they were supposed to do.
Right, and you're starting to see a couple of guys turn a corner for sure. I mean, even Edwin Diaz, you can make a case even when he was put in a game bases loaded. Nobody out, rather, a few games ago and ends up walking a guy right away. But after that, like, he's giving you a little something. Jerry's familiar looks pretty good. Justin Wilson healthy looks pretty good.
Last night,
you're starting to have a little bit of faith in that.
But last night, it was Justin Wilson. He's the guy that got the job done when the game was in the balance.
Sure.
And he had to go out there, and he got two strikeouts. And, you know, when you think about Mickey's decision last night, I mean, I was afraid that if Justin Wilson would have blown up, that we would have come in here again arguing as to whether or not he should have taken out
exactly what would have happened. Exactly.
But they won the game, and they won it going away, and they won it the way that they usually win it at home, with home runs and timely hitting, and guys, the same guys coming through, and they do have a very, you know, balanced lineup. And if you go all the way from 3-6, I don't necessarily know that I agree with what Keith Hernandez was saying last night, that this is like one of the toughest lineups in baseball. It is to a point. But I'm not so sure that it's as good as he was trying to make it sound last night.
Well, when they're at their best, I mean, it is a very, very good lineup. But the problem is there's too much streakiness going on in there. But, you know, when Rosario and Conforto are consistent,
I mean, that changes everything. And then you add the fact that J.D. Davis has got the best batting average of anybody in baseball since the All-Star break. He's hitting like 380
something. All right, so then I'll say thank you, Brody Van Wagenen, for bringing J.D. Davis
sure,
here.
I mean, he deserves a ton of credit
hell
for that.
Yeah, he does.
Without a doubt.
Sure,
I mean,
he does.
And he hits a big home run last night. And the guy is just J.D. Davis, for whatever reason. I mean, I guess because we've been talking a lot about McNeil and we've talking a ton about Rosario. J.D. Davis sort of flies under the radar a little bit. But this guy's a weapon. This guy's an offensive weapon for the Mets, and in the second half he's been dominant for them. So I mean, at home, when they're swinging the bats like that, I mean, the lineup does feel long, and it's not something that we're used to with a Mets lineup. I mean, the bottom half, when you got some injuries, you feel like, oh god, you know, who's it going to be? Is it going to be Guillorme? Is it going to be Rajay Davis, who came up and was pretty good yesterday, but you know, he's still a 38 39 year old journeyman major leaguer. You don't know sort of like what you're talking about 7 8 9, obviously with the pitcher, but 7 8 in the lineup. But I mean, the lineup feels long when you got Conforto and Rosario and Alonso and J.D. Davis in there, and Wilson Ramos hitting the way he's hitting.
And what do they have, 27 out of the next their last 37 games are at home, I believe, right?
Well, yeah, it was 26 last night, so you got 25 now.
25 left, okay.
25 at home, 12 on the road.
Hey, man, you know, it's all right there. And the beauty of this whole thing, when it comes down to you know, the wild card race, the National League is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is.
It is back and forth. And this is exactly what baseball was hoping for. We as Met fans, you know, are hoping for this, be relevant in the middle of August. Here we are. We're hanging there, man. And last night's game was great. Last night, that was exactly what you wanted. You got strong starting pitching. You got really great. I mean, you know, Wilson coming in and getting those two strikeouts. That's what the bullpen's supposed to do.
Sure. And then also, you think about Mercado taking advantage of the drop pop-up, which I didn't think they were going to do. So you get panic on second base. Then you get two outs, and Conforto comes up, hits the bomb. I was so happy that they took advantage of that, because
so
it would have been that would have bothered me. And then also, you know, next inning, Mercado comes up, has an opportunity, tying runs on base, and Justin Wilson strikes him out.
Let's just put it this way. Mercado did not have a good game.
No, he did not.
No, he did not.
This is one he'd like to forget.
He had one of those nights where you're not getting a lot of sleep, you know?
Yeah.
And so, this is it. This is the Mets' run for the playoffs, and key players are still showing up, and hopefully McNeil, they got reasonably good news with McNeil. It sounds like he will be ready to come off the IL.
Yeah.
And if he is, then that's even better. That just continues to lengthen that lineup. So, I don't know, I'm happy about that, but, you know, I didn't stay up and watch the Yankee game last night.
Sure.
I just looked at the highlights this morning.
Right.
A's are pesky. You know, that's all I can tell you.
Always have been, yeah.
And they are at home, too, especially.
And the Yankees always have problems out there. It's just one of those places for them for whatever reason. You know, it's not something that you freak out about. You hope that it ends up not being a sweep in this series. You got the Dodgers after this, which is going to be very, very difficult. And then you finish up with the Mariners on this West Coast trip. But it was just a little disconcerting to see Domingo Germán get smacked around like that, because we haven't really seen that from him. So, I mean, when you want to see this guy be that top end, he was developing into that top end starter you could count on in the front end of a playoff series. You just hope that he puts together after this, puts this one right away, flush it, whatever the cliche is, and then go back and show that you can be that guy. You know, him and Tanaka at the top of the rotation. Because without Germán pitching the way he's been pitching for most of the year, I mean, I feel like you're subtracting a major weapon from the Yankees' rotation. So I didn't love seeing that. Because he was bad. He was bad last night. But that doesn't mean much. You're not going to be great every single night. I just want to see him get back on that hot streak and roll into the playoffs, because there is no innings limit. You don't have to worry about that. Domingo Germán should be a big part of what the Yankees do in the postseason.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know who has a big start today? It's Jay Happ.
Yeah.
Again, you know, for the money he's making, for where they have him pegged in their rotation, he is. I mean, he's just got to go out there. Just can we just shut somebody down, please?
That'd be nice, right? I mean, it's sad, but at this point with Jay Happ, I don't even factor him in to being a part of important games for the Yankees this year. I don't. I mean, unless he goes on a similar run like he did when he was traded over last year in the second half. I mean, do you even think what's Jay Happ going to be for the Yankees in the postseason? He's going to get a start?
I think a reliever.
So you're going to get a start? He's not going to get a start.
I think he's a reliever.
Yeah.
I think he could be like a long man reliever just in case.
Right.
So if Domingo Germán got in trouble in the first inning, let's say, I don't know, against Cleveland, and you know they bang out four or five home runs or whatever crazy thing may happen – I could see he being the guy that come out of the bullpen in that situation.
Sure, I agree. I think that the Yankees will use an opener before they go to Hap. I think the Yankees would use Severino if he comes back healthy for a couple of innings before he gets stretched out, before they use Hap. I think they might even, I don't even know if he'll make the postseason roster, but if he does, they might even use CC Sabathia for a few innings in a postseason start before they go to Hap.
Well, these are all the questions that Brian Cashman's going to have to answer. And, you know, they want to finish strong, too. Now, the good news last night is Judge hit a home run.
Oh, and it looked, I mean, it was like a Judge home run.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
It was not a cheapie.
That's a good thing. You know, we've been saying it incessantly now for the last 3 months. It's about starting pitching. It's going to continue this way all the way until we get into October. It's just going to. And we know what the strengths are of the other teams. We know what the Yankee strength is. And for me, it's really going to come down to whether or not they get a third guy that they can count on, that they can really trust. And that's going to have to be Paxton, because it's not going to be Hap. It's going to have to be Paxton. I believe it will go Tanaka, Herman, and then Paxton. That's what I think will be the way that they'll go with their pitching.
Sure, team. I agree. And then we were going over the splits the other day, home and
splits.
Road. Home and road with
you guys. No, you guys are going over splits.
But I'm telling you, the reason why we were is because you look at Herman and Tanaka on the road as opposed to at home. I mean, it is stark.
It's like Steven Matz.
I mean, those two guys, and especially Herman's got like a sub 2.5 ERA at home, and he's got like an over 5 on the road,
right,
whatever
so,
it is.
So if they so.
Those two guys have to start the playoff series at Yankee Stadium. So, and Tanaka,
yeah,
same thing.
So depending on how they go, I would think. So if you were, one of them is going to have to pitch on the road somewhere along the line.
Right. But, I mean, just to start the playoff series, that's what I'm doing. I'm setting those two guys up to start at Yankee Stadium if I can. Yeah, listen, James Paxton hasn't been good at home. He hasn't been good on the road.
I think it would be Tanaka he starts with then. Because then Tanaka can come back on the road, and then Herman could be the guy that you save for if you get to, you know, game 4 or 5.
Sure. And, I mean, there is something. I mean, if Domingo Herman's been their best pitcher, I would not have a problem with him starting game 1 of the series. I do understand if you're going to pitch Tanaka in game 2, you might as well throw him out there in game 1 as well, just because, you know, you think about his
experience.
Yeah, which I know.
Big game.
I know.
Tanaka, that's,
you know,
what they call him. They call him big game.
I know. I've heard that before. Yeah. I don't, the experience thing, Jerry and I were talking about it. But for a guy in Domingo Herman can go out there and watch in that first game of a playoff series, just like take it all in. You know what I'm saying?
Because
you get those juices flowing in that first game. All of a sudden, he might be all over the place. You take it all in and you go out there for game 2 and you do your thing.
Hey, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, of course.
Don't you wish that the New York Giants were going to play the Cleveland Browns this year?
They play them next year, I know. I would have been great. I know.
It's like, for whatever reason, like the fascination of the Giants in regards to the Browns players and everything, like, you know.
It's not even Odell. I mean, obviously, Baker with his comments yesterday, and Odell is still talking about the Giants.
I will say this about Baker's comments. And I know that, you know, and according to Baker, he's walked back some of these things.
Sure.
If you listen to what he said, he basically said what we all said about where Gettleman drafted Daniel Jones.
Right.
Everybody said it. Now, we all love Daniel Jones. Everybody likes the kid, except, you know, for Yankee fans who booed him the first time that they met him out there at Yankee Stadium. And now all of a sudden you're watching him on the field in preseason. And you're like, oh, well, wow, this kid's pretty good. He could stand in there. He could throw the ball. Wow. Oh, look, maybe David Gettleman does know something. But it's we all said it. We all said, wow, that's great. He was a first-round talent. We didn't think he was a sixth overall pick talent. That was the argument.
Well,
and then the other part of the argument was, if the Giants didn't take him there, would he had still been there when they were picking later in the first round? And most people will tell you the answer to that question is no, he would not have been there.
Sure, and so, we're never going to know, but a lot of people say he wasn't going to be there. Here's the problem that I had with the quote, not so much, you know, the I can't believe they took him there. It was the some people overthink it. That's where people go wrong. They forget you've got to win.
Yeah,
that's the thing. That the implication there of the Giants took him because he's the smart Duke guy who's not going to cause any problems, as opposed to the talented quarterback. You know, it's like the Giants chose him because of personality more than anything.
Well,
that's the implication I didn't like about it.
I guess they were interviewing Baker Mayfield as the draft is happening. So he's you know, reacting in real time like the rest of us were. But now this comes out later, so it's attached to a commentary that maybe he had given back in April. Sure. You know what I'm saying? So now it looks worse because of the way that it's portrayed. But, you know, here's the thing. I think Dave Gettleman is not complicated. I think he's about as uncomplicated a guy out there as there is. Mm-hmm. And he said, look, I want this quarterback. I believe he could be our leader. And I think he could be a really good player. So I'm going to go get him. That's not complicated.
Yeah.
That's not overthinking things. And then I would ask you, how many Division I football teams are there?
I mean, there's 90-something, 90-100.
What?
130?
130.
Oh, wow. Right. And 130, where does Duke rank on that list?
Well, they're in Power 5.
Yeah, I know so all that, but if you had to think of your head, because you're a college expert, because that's why you're chiming in now, I'm asking you, where would you put Duke on the list of those 130 teams? I don't care, Power 5, nothing. Where would you put them on that list?
I would say like 70.
All right, so 70. So here's Daniel Jones leading the 70th ranked team against Clemson and Virginia Tech and Miami and Florida State and all whoever they're playing in bowl games. And the kid's getting his ass kicked every single game. But what is he doing? He's getting up and he's playing. And he's giving his team a chance to win every single time he steps on the field. He didn't go to Oklahoma. You know, he's not going to Alabama. You know, he's not playing at Clemson. He's playing against those teams, right? And what you saw the other night from him with the two fumbles, right,
mm-hmm.
is that he forgot the fumbles and continued to play and played really well after that. That is like an attribute that every coach wants and thrives on or wants his quarterback to thrive on, that once you make a mistake, that it's not going to affect you the rest of the way. So I'm like, man, this kid has shocked everybody by the way he's played. And I would say there's something to him playing for Duke and playing the way that he played when he was at Duke, because he gave his damn team a chance to win.
Sure. I mean, that was one of the positive things that people said about Daniel Jones, was put some talent around the guy.
Yes.
He didn't have much talent around him. And you saw his wide receiver drops that he had in college and all of that stuff, that, hey, maybe you could put an NFL team around him and he'll surprise you. And he hasn't preseason so far, but we all know what that means.
Yeah, but again, you know, you have to take what you do on the practice field and put it on the game field. And the first chance you have to do that as a young quarterback is in preseason.
He looks very accurate and poised and tall.
I am not taking one thing away from the young man for the you know, how he looks. And the fact that he had those key fumbles and
I
had the ball ripped out
him.
Of his hands, yeah, and then came back and
played.
Yeah,
I thought
well.
That was good for him. I'm glad that happened to him.
That is such a strong attribute for a quarterback to have. You know, that Eli has that thing in spades.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he could throw three interceptions and he'll say the same thing after the game as if he threw three touchdowns.
Sure.
And that's what they want. They want that drama-less guy. Like, you know, when Sims played for Parcells, there was no drama. The drama was all Parcells and Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah, screaming
it was
at Sims.
Not, it was not Phil Sims.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Of course.
It's not Eli Manning. Mm-hmm. It wasn't Dave Brown. You know, it wasn't like it wasn't Kerry Collins. You
right.
go down this list of quarterbacks that they have, and, you know, Phil's a great guy, and he's got a great personality, and, you know, he's older now, so he doesn't really care what people think.
Mm-hmm.
But back when he played, you know, he fit the mold of what they want as a quarterback. And I think Daniel Jones falls in that mold perfectly, a drama-less quarterback that is not going to be a pain in the ass, that is not going to be a sideshow, that's not going to be creating news headlines like what's going on out there in Cleveland.
Yeah, which is just every single day. I mean, the GQ going to the well twice with the Browns in a matter of a month.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.